Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2018, Episode 13. All right, full disclosure, after blowing a 10-point lead to Northwestern and getting beat in overtime, Dr. Rob and myself, Travis Justice, could not wait till Monday night to record. After we got into a Twitter spat, I said, get your ass over to my house and let's record tonight. With Dr. Rob, despite not having power all day long because of the October, do we want to call it a blizzard?
Oh my God, it was like a light frosting, and all of a sudden power's down, and OPPD seems to think that like 12 hours is a reasonable time frame in which power to still be out.
You know, it's not like, and I remember the snowstorm of 1997, I believe it was, but that thick, wet, heavy snow.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just ruins everything, man.
It does, but it's not like there was that much of it, for God's sakes. I mean, think about last April. Do you remember, I could even tell you the day, April 19th. I remember because it was Westside High School prom, and that's where my kids go. And we just got absolutely dumped upon by this massive ice and snow. We didn't have half the power outages that we've got for this. I think at one, you know, I checked OPPD's Twitter page, which it's at OPPD Cares. And I tweeted that, like, hey, do you care about the fact that my pipes are going to freeze? Which, to their credit, they actually tweeted back at me.
Did they give you the middle finger emoji, or what'd they give you?
You know, they did the nice version of that. They said, basically, they said, hey, we really hope it doesn't freeze tonight. If it does, here's some tips to keep your pipes from freezing. But a couple of other people who jumped in on the tweet string and said something like, hey, Mother Nature laughs at your tweet. Like, I get the fact that Mother Nature does. It's just the underlying notion that OPPD is out there with a skeleton crew because it's a Sunday, not a Monday. And they'll, hey, you know what? We'll get Jim, who's like manning the weekend desk, to go out and like, he'll splice a couple wires together to get a couple of people back online, but we'll bother fixing this on Monday.
Hey, we do want to remind you that the Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy, the 2018 Remington Trophy celebration, actually coming up on January 12th, 2019. That's when they'll recognize the 2018 winner at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. And I believe 5:30, 6:30 is going to be the program. 7:30 is when the dinner gets started. 5:30, 6:30, somewhere around there is when the cocktail hour starts. You won't want to miss it. You can get your tables. You get your tickets now at RemingtonTrophy.com. Now, we are going to take another break from the Remington Trophy Spotlight to tell you who the Remington Trophy Ford's Legend Award winner is. And this year, it is going to be Lieutenant General Robert L. Caslin, Jr. Now, Lieutenant General Robert Caslin, Jr. was the 59th superintendent of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and he served in that role for 5 years. In fact, he just retired from that position. Lieutenant General Caslin graduated from the U.S. Military Academy in 1975. He earned his master's degree from Long Island University and Kansas State University. Previous to that assignment, Lieutenant General Caslin served as the chief of the Office of Security Cooperation in Iraq. So how about that, Rob? Lieutenant General Robert. And I'm looking at, you can see a picture of him at RemingtonTrophy.com. Look at all the ribbons on his uniform.
This guy's been around the block
Been around the block quite a bit.
Which, you look at what he did in Iraq, you look at what... I applied to the U.S. Military Academy. I applied to West Point.
Really?
I did. I applied to West Point and Air Force Academy. And I got pretty far into the process. It is a humbling process to go through. The guys who make it through there and actually get selected, God, talk about cream of the crop of people. I mean, the men and women who go through that are just absolutely impressive
My
people.
My cousin graduated from the Air Force Academy. Here's what I didn't like about the Air Force Academy graduation. He graduated 36th in his class in physics. At the Air Force Academy, everybody walks, and they do their name. So he was number 30, and they do it in order.
Oh, so you go across the stage in the order of where you
graduated.
Finished.
So you know the last person graduated dead last in their class, but he was like number 36.
You know what that is?
That's a long afternoon.
That's, well, I was going to say, yeah, but that's military motivation right there.
Don't be the last one. But here was the motivation towards the end. So everybody in front had to put a dollar. So whoever got last got a pocket full of cash towards the end. Also, the entertainment has been decided for the Remington Trophy presentation. You will not want to miss Frank Caliendo. Yes, that Frank Caliendo.
I'm so looking forward to this.
I know, comedian, actor, and I'm still working on getting him on the podcast. We may call him one of these nights that we record just to, for a 5-10 minute conversation about what Frank Caliendo is going to bring to the Remington Trophy presentation. So again, January 12, 2019, 6:30 is your cocktail hour, 7:30 is the dinner program. Frank Caliendo will be your entertainment. Of course, we'll be honoring the 2018 Remington the Trophy Award winner. Don't forget the Husker Doc Talk podcast official beer sponsor is Infusion Brewing Company, 2 locations in the Omaha area. Now, here's the bad thing. I know you're all going to be disappointed because this is probably a podcast that Dr. Rob and I should be ripped for. It's Sunday night. It's a not a traditional night that Rob and I record, so we didn't go get any infusion beer tonight. So I apologize that we're not recommending a beer. I can tell you that, well, all the beers at Infusion Brewing Company are really, really, really good. So go to one of their 2 locations, the original location in Benson, just off Maple Street.
Do you have a favorite this year?
You know, that's still that mango habanero has been really good. And surprisingly, that wet hops one we had, I think, 2 weeks ago, three weeks ago.
Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago. That was a good – well, that was just last week. Last week was the graham cracker.
It was the graham cracker one.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago that we had the wet hops. The I'm still up there with Max's Addiction.
Yeah, and I get
that was a good beer.
So maybe
– the Red X IPA is a good one too.
Again, we haven't gone wrong. I mean, it's been really – it's been a good year for Infusion Brewing Company. That's why we drink Infusion Brewing Company. If you want to see a list of the beers that they usually have on tap, go to infusionbrewing.com. That's infusionbrewing.com. And, of course, Dr. Rob drinks Infusion Beer. I drink Infusion Beer. We want you to drink Infusion Beer. The reason we are recording on a Friday, usually we like to wait till the Scott Frost news conference is over on a Monday, and we get to talk about Minnesota coming up. I could give a shit less about Minnesota.
That's because you're an Iowa fan.
Well, could you really, do you care about Minnesota?
Not really.
Okay, so
I'm vaguely interested in PJ Fleck because he's like Jim Harbaugh's annoying little brother.
That's true. He's got this whole mantra, row the boat. If you don't think it's a mantra, download the game notes at Minnesota's webpage.
It's not a mantra. It's like CrossFit. It's a lifestyle.
It is a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle.
But so I set off a shit storm on Twitter, and it started yesterday, and Dr. Rob got pissed off at me, and I just want to bring it up. So
I want to say I got pissed. I just disagreed with
you. So let's go back to Friday. I'm on a radio station in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. John Gaskins, former Lincoln radio host, yep, working in Sioux Falls. I went on there and emphatically said Nebraska's winning. And everybody thought I was crazy. I said, Nebraska's better than Northwestern. I think Nebraska's going to win this. They're going to eliminate the mistakes. This was going to be the week. So I'm feeling pretty good late in the fourth quarter. I'm like, damn, I look like a genius here.
We had a 2-touchdown lead at one point. And honestly, I think that was indicative of the two teams.
Now, here's what everybody, most Husker fans got mad at me for, and Dr. Rob disagrees with me about. And hopefully we'll have a civil conversation tonight. He probably didn't like the way I worded it, and I said Scott Frost. I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the tweet up right
you
now.
You said this one's on Frost.
Yeah, basically, the Huskers lost this game because of Scott Frost. And what I meant by that was, I think at 4th-and-1, in overtime, you're on the 16-yard line, you kick the field goal. You take the points. You play the odds.
Here's the thing, and I know some guys actually worked the percentages out of, okay, well, what's the field goal? What's Nebraska's current field goal percentage? What's their third and fourth down conversion percentage? What's the percentage of trying a conversion with a quarterback under center versus in shotgun? Several people worked these percentages out.
They're data analytics guys.
Yeah, and I admit the true statistics said, yeah, technically you've got a slightly better chance of making it if you kick the field goal. But I don't think, you know, from a gut feeling standpoint, you've got a kicker, little bit rattled. He missed a field goal, should have had it.
You missed an extra point too, right?
Missed an extra point. So you can't give me the, well, you're on the 16-yard line. You missed a freaking extra point. And kickers are, they're like baseball players. You get the yips, and you're not going to get out of that slump for a little bit, especially when it's a true freshman kicker. And he had a field, he had another field goal that he did make in the game. And God, it would talk about by the skin of his teeth. I mean, that field goal just barely went inside the upright. So you've got one barely made field goal, a missed field goal that was just a straight shot and he hit the upright. And then you got a shanked extra point. At that point, if I'm Frost, I'm saying, you know what? It's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because if you put that kicker back out there, A, you're taking a kid that probably has a little bit of a dinged psyche. And if he misses it, you're going to mess his head up even more. Now, hold on. You're raising your finger like, hold on a second here. The other thing is that if he misses it, everybody and their dog, you included probably, is going to come out and say, oh, my God, why didn't you go for it?
I wouldn't have been in that.
You got this kid who barely made one field goal, missed another, and shanked an extra point. What the hell are you doing putting him out there in a massive pressure situation, game on the line in overtime, lining him up to kick a field goal, and look, he missed it. God, you totally should have gone for it. Look how many yards you rushed for. What was it, 16 yards shy of hitting the 500 mark again? Freaking go for it. It's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. And at that point in time, Frost didn't have a lot of faith in his kicker, I think. And he said, screw it. I'm not going to put this on one kid's shoulders. I'm going to put it on 11 kids' shoulders. Let's go get a first down.
So before we recorded tonight on the Husker Doc Talk, which is Rob's Twitter page, which you can follow at Doc Talk Sports. Yes, I also have access to that Twitter page, so occasionally I can put some tweets out there. But I thought it would be good to put a poll up. And I put a poll up for about 6 hours, because I knew we were recording tonight. We got about 500 votes, which I think is quite a few in a short amount of time.
Not bad.
Hindsight being 2020, what would you have done on 4th-and-1 in overtime? 47% said kick the field goal. 35% said quarterback under center. 18% say quarterback in the shotgun. Now,
you realize statistically
it's probably what it should be.
That's about 53% of people saying go for it.
So, no, and I
yeah, that's the majority of people saying go for it.
Let's get into the philosophy of things, okay? And I had Michael Sevier going off on me on Twitter saying,
well, and I don't know. See, you can say philosophy, but this was so situational.
Okay, no. Maybe
look at how the kicker had performed. Look at the kicking game during the day.
So let's go to the quarterback under center. So
this kid is not a Brown brother.
So
you've
explained your kicking philosophy. Now, being an offensive lineman, tell me, and Michael Sevier will go, hey, they went twice under center, and this isn't offense that's going to go under center. And I get that, but you have to be able in those situations as an offensive lineman. Don't you want to say, get under center, Adrian Martinez, you're a big enough guy, you can bowl 1 yard ahead. Let us propel you. Tell me the
That's what I would say.
Okay.
And I'd say, get a Zigbo in there and tell him, hey, don't kill him, but you need to go full USC and slam into, who was it? Was it Reggie Bush? Yeah, have a Zigbo slam into Martinez from behind. And shove them forward.
Yes. Now they're going to say, well, the fumbled snap. I don't care. I would still play my odds. And this is where I didn't have a problem with him going for it. I really didn't. My problem is in that situation, you're 4 yards back. Instead of 4th-and-1, you're at 4th-and-5 now. Right?
Yeah. And so, Again, given the time period I played in, which again,
I
was on the Nebraska team also, where Osborne said, "Hey, let's take Tommy and Brooke and back them up 4 yards and run our entire running offense out of shotgun." So, I see both sides of the coin here. If you're going to run a shotgun play, make it a play that gets the quarterback out in space. You know, heck, even throw a screen, throw a pass to the flat. That'll get you 1 yard pretty much every time. I run an option. Do something. It's but the quarterback and shotgun is not a great straight ahead play. It's just not. Defense has too much time to react.
Because so what else would they have done? I think. Do you think they would have gone straight ahead there? We don't know because the snap was so freaking bad.
Yeah.
Do you think they were going to go straight ahead?
I'm not sure. I couldn't tell what the hell the play was going to be. So
I think that's what drove me nuts, and that's why I sent it out there. I go, you really had three options: kick a field goal, probably the safe option; go for it, take some balls. But I
think a lot of people look at it though and go, kick the field goal is the safe option.
And you don't think it was?
And it's not with this kicker and with this kicker and the psyche that he's dealing with at this point in time. That's why I say it's too situational to look at it from a pure numbers or statistics standpoint, is that I don't think Frost has faith in this kicker. And I definitely don't think he has faith in this kicker to say, hey, we're going to have this kid go out and not necessarily win the game, but just give us 3 points so we don't lose automatically if the other team makes a kick.
Now, let's talk about what went wrong, and that was a bad snap. So Aaron Graham, part of the pipeline. And Aaron's a great guy. We see him at the Remington Trophy presentation. He had this on Facebook yesterday, and I thought it was interesting, and Aaron's such a great guy, and I trust every word he says, really. But he says, I'm going to read his Facebook post, and you let me know what you think of this. He says, I have shotgun snapped over 10,000 balls to quarterbacks in practice and games throughout my football career. About 3 or 4 years ago, I noticed more and more centers start using what is called a dead snap. A dead snap is when you hold the end of the football instead of the side, like how you would hold a football to throw a pass. Whoever decided that this is a better way to shotgun snap a football should be shot. What we saw in today's Husker game.
Got a big text and not mincing words right there.
What we saw in today's Husker game is the exact reason why I would never recommend to a young center to learn to snap this way. When the game is on the line, your hands and gloves and even the ball are wet and sweaty. I wouldn't want to risk having the ball slip out of my hand like it unfortunately did to the Nebraska center today. Just a little advice from an old washed-up center. Go Big Red forever. And not only that, you throw in a wet ball, sweaty hands, and nerves.
Yeah.
Because there's nerves in there, too. You're like, crap, it's 4th-and-1 in overtime, and we just gave up a 99-yard drive. We don't get it here. We're screwed. Is he wrong? I don't think he's wrong.
No, I don't think he is at all. So here, and we were talking about this a little bit before the show. Here's what I think is going on here, is that the dead snap method, and I agree, I'm seeing it everywhere. I see high schoolers doing it. I see college kids. I haven't seen a ton of NFL guys doing it yet, but I know what's out there. Being a good shotgun snapper is not necessarily an easy thing. It's actually pretty.
Okay, tell me the difference, because I don't know. And besides the distance, what's the difference between a long snapper and a shotgun snapper?
A long snapper ball's got a much lower trajectory. It has to be a spiral. And part of the reason it has to be a spiral is because it's going for a longer distance. Has to be very accurate, and you're basically launching it about a foot to a foot and a half off the ground. If it's a dead snap or it has any wobble to it at all, it's going to nick the ground and go bouncing every which way. So the true long snap it's an upside down and backward spiral pass a foot off the ground. It's not the easiest thing to do.
Okay.
A long snap, you know, a shotgun snap, the way it's traditionally been done has essentially been kind of the sort of an abbreviated version of a deep snap or a long snap. You get the ball a little bit higher off the ground, and you're still trying to get it back there accurately with a little bit of a spiral motion to it. It doesn't have to be like a true spiral, but you're basically passing the ball back to the quarterback through your legs. Now, the dead snap, the reason everybody's using it is because it's easy.
Is that more of a knuckleball then?
It's a knuckleball.
Okay.
It is to snapping what the underhanded free throw is, like you drop the ball beneath your legs and lob it up. It's what the underhanded free throw is, or banking a free throw is in basketball.
Okay.
There's zero style points. It's ugly. It's probably going to go in, but no self-respecting professional is ever going to do
it. So when you saw the bad snap, were you surprised? I mean, it's just a comedy of errors and you're snake bitten.
A little bit that. Now, here's the thing, though. You got a kid in Farmer. I mean, there was Farmer at center. 63, that's Farmer, or is it 62? I just had a complete mind blank here. Was it Farmer or Conrad that was in on that play?
I don't know.
Anyway, Farmer's been playing a lot at center, so you've got Farmer, and then they move Bo Wilson into guard, which I think overall has been a better move. I think the overall productivity on the offensive line has been much improved since then, since they made that move. But with Farmer, you got a guy who I think's done a reasonably solid job at center. But this is the first year he's played center, really. So you've got a guy who hasn't done it much, and you're asking him to go out there with a true freshman quarterback, and you're asking him to perform on a high level. Now, using that particular snap, that dead snap, I think the reason a lot of people use it is because it's easy to do. It's easy to teach. You can take a guard and automatically, almost in literally with a week's worth of practice, morph them into the center. You can take that 6'3" tackle and turn them into a center. You can take a high school kid and turn them into a center. It's easy to do using that particular snap. The under the quarterback snap is actually not very easy. There's a technique to it. There's a rhythm to it. It's not an easy thing to do.
And that's why you do have to practice it on a regular basis. I mean,
you do.
The reason you see, or you used to see all the time, just centers hiking to quarterbacks to get the snap down. I get that.
It is. I would say from a difficulty standpoint, doing the dead snap version of the shotgun snap is the easiest out of the three, as opposed to doing a traditional shotgun snap and a quarterback under the center snap.
And the reason I said on my tweet that, well, because Scott Frost called the play, so it falls on him. And you and I also got in a little argument that it's a collective thing that happens throughout the game. Not one play could affect the game. Well, I would disagree with that because that was the game. That was the one play.
At that very point in time, yeah, it was, but I would come back and say, shit, you know what? Maybe they shouldn't have turned it over earlier in the game.
Maybe
the defense could have not allowed Northwestern to get literally 450 passing yards. Maybe Nebraska could have made a field goal earlier,
but the difference being, Rob, is that does a game come down to what one play, right?
Yeah, let's put it on Pickering. Pickering lost the game. He missed the field goal. He missed the PAT. Now, somebody else pointed out to me that Northwestern missed a field goal and Nebraska got the PAT back with the two-point conversion. I see your point there, but strategies change based upon points and how far ahead or how far behind you are. And I think that changes things also. But I'm going to sit there and say, hey, we left 4 points on the field we should have gotten, and if we had them, we would have won the game.
Now, you threw Iowa at me when they lost to Wisconsin. You know, was it?
But that was my point.
But one play, I think, did lose the game for Iowa. I really do. It's they're up. I think they're up 10. They got a punt. The punt comes to an absolute stop, and a guy drive just isn't paying attention, hits it, gives the Wisconsin the
ball. And I get it, but they had a couple of other ugly turnovers in that game too.
They gave them 17
But it's
points.
It's I sit there and I go like, well, why didn't Ferentz just feed the ball to Fant nonstop? Dude, he could out jump half of Wisconsin's linebackers and defensive backfield. The guy's not coverable. Well,
if you listen to Noah Fant's brother, he's not getting the ball enough. Did you see that?
I didn't.
Oh yeah.
I hate to say this, I'm a fan of the kid.
Yeah.
He's not getting the ball enough.
Yeah, but you also have another quarter or tight end, T.J. Hockenson. That's really good. I mean, he does have. He's now fourth on Iowa's touchdown list for most touchdowns. I mean, it's not like he's not getting the ball enough.
I get it, but he should be getting it more.
Back to Nebraska, however.
I'm just saying it's, you know, I threw out the example of the 93 Nebraska team when we lost to Florida State in the Orange Bowl. Byron Bennett didn't lose the game on a missed field goal. We lost that game on 100 plays throughout the course of the game. Penalties here, mistakes there, bad officiating calls. There's a lot of reasons we lost that game. There's a lot of reasons Nebraska lost to Northwestern.
Well, but let's go to two. Okay, we've already covered one, right?
Okay.
You go for it on fourth. You and I don't mind going for it. I just would have went under center. I would have played my odds better going under center than shotgun. Then it would have been under center for me. Then field goal, then out of the shotgun. To me, that's philosophy, and I always use the basketball analogy. You're up three with 10 seconds to go. Do you foul the guy before they have a chance to take the three-point shot, put him out of the line for a two-pointer, and you win by one? It's just one of those. So we know that. Now let's go to the previous defensive play. You get a great punt, you get a good punt, great bounce, ends up at the one. You let Northwestern with zero timeouts go 99 yards in 2 minutes. You and I have talked that I'm not sold on Nebraska's defensive coordinator. They give up yards. They give up points.
And I don't know if I'm 100% sold either. I'm kind of reserving judgment because I don't think on either side of the ball Nebraska's performed to potential. I mean, I look at what they've done on offense, and I'm sitting here going, oh, my God, we're putting up 500 yards a game. Forget what the defense is doing. We should be outscoring the ever-loving shit out of people, and we're not. So the offense is definitely not holding up their end. I shouldn't say they're not holding up their end. They're not finalizing. They're not finishing. They're not bringing that potential full circle. As good as they're playing, and I think everybody looks at Nebraska's offense and goes, yeah, that's not the problem. Well, it's maybe not, but they're definitely not as good as what they could be. Now, you look at a lot of those penalties. I mean, God, there's a lot of holding calls still. And that's getting old. Now, you're getting a lot of holding and defensive pass interference calls also in the defense.
What do you think of roughing the passer? Was it the first play?
Oh my God, there was an atrocious call.
I agree with you. It was horrible. We were like, you look at it and go, "Come on, man! Is it because he hit him in the face?" Or
yeah, but it was a pretty light blow. I get the whole blow to the head thing, but that one looked completely non-deliberate, which was also why. Oh my God, it's all running together now for me. Was it against Purdue where you had, it was against David Blau with Purdue that you had another just absolutely mindless roughing the passer call, but it was the exact same thing. An arm came up, you had just this kind of barely glancing blow across the quarterback's head, and the ref threw the flag. That blow to the head, I think, should be pretty deliberate, and neither one of these hits were deliberate in any way, shape, or form. And so that was just an atrocious call. Now,
I mean, that only gave him 50. The one thing that put it to the 16, so it's not like it helped. It gave him a first down. I get it.
But it takes a lot of I've played.
Yeah, you're right.
I've played offense. There's a massive amount of pressure when you're sitting there.
Yeah.
on the 2 foot line as opposed to the 16 yard line.
Yeah, that's true.
You got a little room to move. You got a little breathing room. I'd be the first to tell you there's kind of a little there's a little logic in the back of your head saying, crap, you know what? Even if we don't get this, our punter's got some room here when you're on the 16-yard line. When you're on the 2 foot line and you're thinking, crap, if we get stopped here, like if we get second and 10, and then we run the ball and get 2 yards and it's third and 8, and then we have to throw, and it's incomplete. Now it's we're on the 3 yard line. Our punter has no room. There's a lot of pressure when you're backed up like that. There really, really is, and it's hard. I mean, linemen feel that. Everybody feels that. So it does that changed things a lot. All of a sudden,
It's life, right? It's like
it is when you're on the 2 yard line. When you're on the you're on the 2 foot yard, 2 foot line coming out as an offense, you've got about 1/4 of one page of your playbook that you can run. You're really limited on what you can do from a risk standpoint. Don't want to give up a safety, etc. When you're on the 16 yard line, 9.5 out of 10 pages are available all of a sudden. So it really, really changes things. So that penalty was kind of that completely changed the whole makeup of the drive. So, and now we can talk about the penalties too if you want point.
Go ahead, go right into it.
Well, no, because a few people asked me about this. You look at it, Northwestern had one penalty. Which I'd be the first to tell you, people asked me all week long, hey, God, do you think does Nebraska get their win this week? And so you're thinking, they're playing against a bunch of 4-0 students in engineering who rarely turn the ball over and almost never have penalties. They don't get penalized that much. Now there's also a bit of a, and I truly believe this, and I answered a question with this on Saturday. There's a bit of a human element here in the whole officiating thing. I understand these guys are truly trying to be impartial, but it's not like they're automatrons. They're humans, and I actually think that officiating has gotten a lot weaker since the introduction of instant replay. I remember talking to guys I know that officiate. Cleet Blakeman, there's a couple of other guys I know that do it, but they had said that when instant replay came out in college football, and I get it, Cleet's in the NFL, but he did
Big 12 for a long time.
Yeah, but he was an old Big 8, Big 12 guy. Kelly Saulfield told me this as well. Kelly, I think, is still officiating in the Big 12. But they told me that when instant replay came out, they really worried that it was going to kind of eat away at the quality of the officiating, because it'd be sort of this mindset of, if it's a reviewable play and if I don't get it right, screw it. We'll just go to replay. And I think that's happened. I think you've seen a decline in the quality of officiating. And you see some of these calls where, from a human element, the way I looked at it was, if you've got Nebraska, who's had they've had a ton of penalties.
9 for 89 on Saturday.
But it's kind of turning into this situation where I'm seeing just some absolutely ungodly ticky-tack stuff getting called. And I'm talking some of the offensive line holdings.
Why do you think that is?
It's the juvenile delinquent situation. You got a kid who is kind of this kid's kind of a shit, and he's always getting in trouble, and he's a bit of a smart aleck to his teachers, and if he even remotely does something wrong, he's getting nailed for it. Now you got the teacher's pet sitting over here, and he's gotten 10 out of 10 on his spelling tests all through elementary school. He's been blasting through the multiplication tables like nobody's business. You know what? If he screws up, do you think anybody's keeping a half an eye on him? You're not keeping an eye on the guys who don't get nailed as much. You're putting every ounce of every bit of effort is going into watching the guys who've screwed up the most. And that's Nebraska. And so officials just have this tendency to, when you get a team like a team that gets penalized a lot, tends to continue to get penalized a lot because officials expect them to. They expect them to have penalties. They expect them to hold. And so, you know, there's an old adage that for an offensive lineman, if you're not holding, you're not trying. And there's this similar adage that officials could call holding on every single play.
And that's true, right?
It is. It is 100% true. Guess what I saw in the Northwestern game? Because I really tried, I tried hard to watch. I saw blatant holds by Northwestern's offensive line on every single play. Believe me, I watched the offensive line. That's the only thing I watched during football games was what are the linemen doing?
Because it was predominantly pass protection because they only ran for 32 yards.
They did. Ben Stille got. I mean, he was literally throwing his arms up in the air. Defensive linemen do this. It always made me laugh when they did it with me. But they throw their arms up in the air with this like, look, I'm getting held. I'm getting held. I'm flailing. I'm getting held. God, Nebraska's D linemen were just—I mean, God, they were like an 1880s railroad. They got held up so much. I mean, it was just like bandits all over the place. It was ridiculous. They never got called for it. It was horrible officiating. I understand why. Doesn't make it any better. I mean, it was crap officiating by the guys watching it, but they did it. They didn't call Northwestern because Northwestern never gets called for stuff.
Of course, Nebraska again with 3 turnovers, the 9 penalties, 89 yards. So you still had the crucial mistakes, the mental mistakes, and just come at inopportune times. This may sound like a weird question. I don't think it is, though. Was the kick in the balls that they got on Saturday, losing the way they did, was that lower than the Michigan game? Is this we said it couldn't get any lower after the Michigan game?
See, I never really
Boy.
Dude, I think I even tweeted something about the fact, yeah, I could see it getting lower.
Yeah. And was Saturday it? I mean, you're up 10.
No, I really don't.
Okay.
I really don't. Now, one, you look at what Michigan did to Wisconsin. And all of a sudden, I think a few people are sitting here going like, ooh, holy shit, maybe Harbaugh's turned a corner up in Ann Arbor, and maybe these guys are pretty freaking good. Let's see what they do.
Shane Patterson's playing a really good football right now.
You know, for the first time since I think he's hit the door in Ann Arbor, Harbaugh's got a quarterback. I really do. And he's got a guy
who... Jake Rudock?
He had a
good year, though.
He actually was okay. He really was. I actually thought Rudock had, in hindsight, that was a good move for him. I don't fault him for making that move. That ended up being a good move for Rudock. I think in terms of having a guy that fits his system, Harbaugh needs a little Kaepernick in there. He needs a guy who can do what Patterson did and take off and gash you for 70, go full Marv Seiler for 72 yards on you. You need a guy who can do that. Now, I don't think anybody really expected Patterson to do that, but he's the kind of guy who can do that. And so I think that's part of it. But you look at what Michigan's doing right now. I think they're a pretty damn good team. I think after they lost that opening game to Notre Dame, everybody thought, same old Michigan. They're gonna lose to all their rivals. They're gonna have an 8-4 season, and Michigan's gonna slowly turn into the Iowa of the Big Ten East. That team that goes 7-5, 8-4, and they're just okay with it. Sorry, I had to get my dig in there when I could.
I know, you got to do that.
You're giving me that look like, yeah, I heard you say that. I'm just not going to respond.
Dick.
But yeah, I think Notre Dame is a lot better than what people thought they were going to be. And I think Michigan is far, far better than what people expected them to be.
I actually think I'd like to see, and I know we're not going to see it, but because Notre Dame beat Michigan, but I'd like to see that game now. I think it'd be a different outcome. I think Michigan's a better team right now.
I think Notre Dame's pretty freaking good.
Yeah, and they struggled against Pitt, though.
They did a bit. I give teams a few letdown games here and there during the year. But I think if you've got them in a situation where both those teams are going to really get up for each other, I don't know. That's a good question. Michigan looked really good against Wisconsin. I mean, that was my Saturday night was watching that game.
And I guess the low point is you have more Nebraska fans at Ryan Field than Northwestern fans.
I love the fact that they had to force Northwestern into a silent count.
You are literally minutes, if not seconds, away from your first win of the year, and it's taken from you.
But Northwestern does this routinely, year in and year out, to everybody.
They lost to Akron, man.
They have those inexplicable losses that make you just go, how the hell did that happen?
I know.
And so I get it, but you know what? Then they end up having a nice season. They get their 8-10 wins. They go to a bowl game, and people freaking love Pat Fitzgerald.
I mean, look at it now. 3-3 on the year. 3-1 in the Big Ten. Northwestern's 3-1 in the Big Ten.
When I look at their schedule, I mean, I'm looking at them having an 8-4 year.
You know, with Michigan State, your Michigan State Spartans.
Knocked off Penn State.
Now, with Wisconsin losing and having to go to Penn State yet, Iowa still has a chance to go win the Big Ten West. I think the Big Ten West.
It could happen.
There's a lot of things that could happen. Hey, don't forget the Husker Doc Dog podcast has many supporters, including Ticket Express. Chad was from Ticket Express, one of the first to chime in on Twitter when I said, hey, what would you do? Hindsight being 2020, and Chad was like, take the points, kick the field goal. You know what
Damn
Chad
it,
does?
It's not automatic with Pickering.
But you know what Chad does do really well? He gets you into events you want to go to. Let's say you wanted to see Terrence Bud Crawford at the CHI Health Center last night. Well, he had tickets to that. In fact, there was over 13,000 people there. Ticket Express is your source for Husker tickets. It's your source for Husker basketball tickets. It's your source for boxing tickets. You get even theater tickets at the Orpheum. Anything you want to go to Ticket Express, just go to TicketExpress.com. That's TicketExpress.com. I want to thank them for their support. Also want to thank Husker Hounds. Scotty, I know, made the trip to Chicago this weekend to see Nebraska play. I know he was hoping to watch a Nebraska win. He's still holding out hope. And we're going to have Scotty on this podcast before the season is up. We got to have our yearly one at Infusion coming up. But did you get that at Husker Hounds? Dr. Robbs, I noticed he was wearing a new jacket tonight, and he's got his new...
I think I got this one last year. This is like the most comfortable jacket I own.
It's like a winter... It's like a rainproof...
It's a WeatherTech.
Yeah.
But yeah, this thing's like water-resistant, windbreaker, but it's kind of like a heavy windbreaker. It's like my favorite jacket.
And he got that at Husker Hounds. So go to huskerhounds.com.
Also, I got a lot of Husker Hounds
stuff. Also want to thank Husker Max for distributing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. It's always good to have David Max and his team pumping out content 365 days a year, 7 days a week. Huskermax.com, the official distributor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. All right, Dr. Rob, we may not even talk about Minnesota because I don't give a shit about Minnesota.
PJ Fleck will run around a lot. Nebraska will lose.
Look at all these questions.
Let's do the questions. Questions are good.
Greg in Tulsa. Dr. Rob, well, we punted to the 1 yard line, but if we get half a yard on a fourth down, did we deserve to win? Also, after the onside kick, three after and out, I'm just reading this verbatim, was the line tired, worn out, or just dispirited? Another game we should have won.
Woulda, shoulda, coulda. Should they have won? Yeah, I don't disagree with him or you, Travis, when you say Nebraska should have won. Yeah, they should have won that game. Nebraska, in my mind right now, Nebraska should be sitting at, I actually think they should be 4-2, but
well, that's fair. I can see where you come up with that. Absolutely, I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah, there's some mindset there that says they should actually be 5-1. But anyway, I don't know. It's hard to tell if the line was worn out. I don't believe offensive linemen should get worn out. That's just me. Defense, yeah. They've got a – I was going to say weak defense, but that's not the right word. They don't have great depth on this defense. They've got some talent. Khalil Davis, I think, is the real deal. Luke Gifford's playing excellent football. So they've got some guys who are doing some very good things, but God, they just have no depth. They really don't, and I think that really hurts them. But yeah, they in the situation they were in, they should have won this game.
Jeff out in Highlands Ranch, Colorado says, on the last possession, it seemed Nebraska was not playing to lose instead of taking them by the jugular by running three vanilla plays that were almost guaranteed not to make a first down. I thought Frost would be more aggressive in that situation. Is this what it seemed like to you? He's talking about the last offensive possession.
Oh, boy.
Now, keep in mind, Northwestern called all three of its timeouts right there.
They did. Which kind of slows things down a little bit, and it changes what you can call. God, I was drinking the beer pretty hard at that point. I didn't have anywhere to go. So,
do you think it seemed like he didn't try to get a first down in that situation? I literally think he thought if they burn their three timeouts and you pin them deep, that the defense would stop. I think
he was trying to maybe play it a little bit safe.
Can't do that.
Yeah, which goes against his nature, although going for it on fourth down is, you'd say, is with his nature, yeah. And that's not playing it safe. How did that work out?
Dave says, why do Husker cornerbacks leave wide receivers open several yards, giving them a cushion?
You know, it kind of depends. I mean, you look at DiCaprio Boodle was like draped all over his guy the entire game. So enough though that he picked up a few penalties, which two of the, you know, a lot of my buddies were complaining to me. It's like, God, why doesn't he turn his head around? God, there was a couple of those. I thought he was actually making a pretty good effort to get his head turned around, and the official still threw the flag. So those were some pass interference calls that I thought were pretty ticky-tack. I thought Boodle was truly trying to get around to make a play on the ball as opposed to just face guarding. He had one that I thought was a pretty blatant face guard, and I thought it was a well-deserved pass interference penalty. But, that's just a zone scheme when that happens. When you see those guys with that kind of cushion, it's a zone. Otherwise, it's a blown coverage, in which case you've got guys that are still trying to conceptually learn the defense, and that takes time. And so you're going to see that happen in a transition year. But I thought there's a lot of guys, like I said, Boodle's a great example, where you had guys that were playing really tight at the corner spot. I think when it's man coverage, I think they do a good job of actually playing really aggressive.
Nick says, I don't understand why so many people, including Damon Benning, on the radio are saying this loss was on coaching. Well, I was one of them too there, Nick. Yes, there were some tough calls to make, but Frost's decision to punt and pin Northwestern inside the two and make them use all their timeouts was the right play. If your defense can't stop a team from going 99 yards in a minute 45 with no timeouts, that's on players, not coaching. Do you think he was a little conservative in his playing calling towards the end? But like he said, if you throw it up and stop the clock on an incomplete pass, you're helping them. Damned if you do, damned if you don't, right?
I that's probably a good way to put it. I frankly agree. I think when you're trying to play the odds there, the more talent you have, the better guys understand your system, the more aggressive you can be. I look at, you know, I've thrown this out there pretty frequently, the Central Florida Auburn game. I mean, it was the last game these guys coached at Central Florida. They'd had 2 years to kind of get their system into these guys. They had buy-in. They had better athletes than what we've got in Lincoln right now. And they were ungodly aggressive. The last offensive play of the game for Auburn which they had driven down and were with one touchdown to tying up the game. But they had a they had a nice drive. They were on, I couldn't tell you, 15-yard line going in, 20-yard line going in. And Auburn's All-American center, we featured him here on the podcast as a Remington Trophy finalist, goes out injured. And they did a complete shuffle. They moved, I think, like the left tackle to center. They moved the left guard to left tackle. They brought another guy in from the sideline to fill the left guard spot. And the whole time I'm sitting there thinking, God, if I'm Chenander, I'm blitzing the shit out of these guys. I'm bringing the freaking house, because you got a shuffled offensive line and your best offensive lineman just went to the sideline with an ankle injury. Sure enough, Chenander brought the house. He brought everybody. Three different guys just drilled Auburn's quarterback. I mean, three guys hit him, and this lame duck lob goes up in the air that's easily intercepted by Central Florida to secure the win. Well, Chenander made that call because he had a little bit better athletes, but he had confidence in what those guys could do. Those players understood the defense. Those players understood the situation. And when you've got that, you can gamble more. You can be aggressive. You're always playing to win, but you can take that really aggressive step towards playing to win. It would have been very easy for a defensive coordinator in that situation in that Peach Bowl game against Auburn to say, you know what, we're going to rush three, maybe four, and drop seven or eight guys into coverage. Maybe drop seven back and we'll leave a spy on the quarterback or somebody to cover the running back in the flat. But he didn't do that. He just blitzed freaking everybody, and it paid off. But if you've got a group of players that have high talent and have a high level of understanding of the defense, neither of which we have in Lincoln right now, it limits your ability to be that aggressive.
Fair enough. Bob writes in, says, hey guys, longtime listener, second time emailer. Take a long drink before answering this one, fellas. I'm going to take a long one before sending it. If we agree that winners tend to find a way to win, and winning is a habit, the opposite is also true. I agree with you there. I'm getting concerned that even the young players are getting infected with finding a way to find defeat in the jaws of victory. We have assumed things will get better next year through turnover. And he's talking about turnover of players. If the culture is self-perpetuating, could freshmen get infected? What are some of the signs that you see that it will get better next year?
You want to know the number one sign for me that things are going to get better next year? I'm not seeing the, you know, I think we talked about this last week. I'm not seeing that mental breakdown on the players. I'm not seeing guys crumble. I'm seeing guys continuing to go out there week in and week out and showing up and playing like they're playing to win. Northwestern's, God, they're kind of an odd duck team. I was going to say they're not a bad team, but they every year Northwestern will be the worst 8-10 win team in the country. They're going to get 8-10 wins because they're not that good talent-wise, but Fitzgerald's going to get the most out of them that he can. So that makes this game a little bit of an outlier, but for the most part, they're a well-disciplined, very, very high-effort team that on any given day can beat a Nebraska, can beat a Michigan State. They can beat somebody that they do. They spend every year game in and game out beating teams they have no business beating. And that's because they do a number of things really, really well. There's a reason Northwestern won this game. It's sometimes the other guy gets a paycheck too. And just because it wasn't Michigan or it wasn't Wisconsin doesn't mean Northwestern didn't deserve this win. Should Nebraska have won? I think Nebraska should have won, but they didn't. for all the reasons I just stated. But I think the number one reason I think things will get better is because I haven't seen these guys. The one game where I think they weren't mentally in it was Michigan. But now we're finding out, well, shit, maybe Michigan actually is that good. But I'm not seeing guys cashing it in. And I think last year's team, you would have seen that at this point. After three, four, five losses in a row, these guys would have – last year, they would have they did cash it in last year. The Ohio State game ended about the time the Ohio State players got off the bus pregame.
Listen, once you fired your athletic director last year, they all quit because they knew it was over.
It was done.
That's the hard part of firing your athletic director in the middle of the season, because as a player, you know, well, he got fired because of football. It's like when Steve Peterson got fired. Bill Callahan knew he was done, and Mike Riley knew that he was done.
Be like the Kansas AD getting fired.
Yeah.
It's basketball.
Yeah. But he got fired right before the season, and poor Dave Beatty, he has no chance whatsoever.
Yeah.
He didn't sign it, but JJK says, do you guys think the Huskers should hold off on the system change and just try to utilize players' talents that are in the system now? And thoughts on the defensive philosophy, should Nebraska run a 4-3? First of all, this isn't Bill Callahan.
I don't know. The last dropback quarterback transferred to Oregon State.
Yeah, so the system change for offensively, I don't think is that big of a deal. I really don't. It's not like Callahan his first year. He should have stuck.
No.
It's complete. That's an apples to.
What? You don't think Joe Daly could have worked in Callahan's offense?
He didn't work well.
No, I agree. I don't think that's the issue. It's just sometimes shit takes time.
Dan says, obviously many things went wrong during the fourth quarter debacle. That being said, seriously, does the defensive coordinator survive the offseason? My understanding is they could have spent the money needed to bring in a real defensive coordinator. I did watch this guy at UCF, did not like his D down there either.
You know, everybody says that. There's like two games that they got lit up, and they won both of them. But there was the South Florida and the Memphis game. The second Memphis game, technically, if you want to split hairs, I think they held them to like either 3 points or 10 points the first time they played them in 2017. And those were two high-scoring offenses. I mean, those were two teams that put 40 points up on everybody. They played a pretty good season on defense otherwise.
Do you think there are changes in the coaching staff? There always is, right? There's always going to be some guys who moved to a different job.
Yeah.
But
there might be. I don't think you'll see this wholesale change on defense where Frost is going to say like, yeah, we need a new D coordinator. Chenander's not cutting it. I don't think you see that happen. Unless you get literally till year two or year three. I mean, think about Mike Riley and Mark Banker.
Yeah.
You didn't see a change until going into year three. And, you know, Banker's not very good, but, God, I think Diaco's a guy who would shine as, you know, look at what's happening at Oklahoma right now. I think Diaco would shine as a position coach. Anything more than that, I think he's just an utter disaster.
One of the dumbest things I saw on Twitter all day on Sunday came from the USA Today that had the buyout of Scott Frost's contract if they were to fire him. And
yeah, that did exactly what USA Today wanted it to do.
And I watched
that got tweeted and replied to and retweeted. That got so many hits. USA Today is so freaking happy they put that out.
It's really – and then you had journalists going, this is what gives journalism a bad name. Listen.
I just thought journalists give journalism a bad name.
At the end of the day, the truth is you're judged – you need to drive people to your website. That drove people to the USA Today website.
That's what I mean. It got hits.
Yeah. So you can say what you want about it, because there really wasn't that much factually inaccurate about it. I mean, they just went through, here's what it would cost. So
yeah, there was zero opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, well, here's what it's going to cost, and if people are upset, and you're like, well, nobody's upset. Well, no, but you clicked on it, you went and read it, and the advertisements were there, and they accomplished what they needed to accomplish. That's not bad journalism. That's good salesmanship. That's good marketing.
That was a marketing article.
despite being ludicrous, right?
Yeah,
that's how you market. That's how you get people to check out your product. And a lot of people still read the USA Today. So yeah, it was one of the dumbest things we've seen. But anybody who follows Nebraska football knows that wasn't going to happen, and it just gets people talking, which is kind of funny. So, all right. So I swore we were going to talk about Minnesota. Minnesota gave Ohio State a better game than I thought. Ended up losing 30-14. I'm done predicting games for Nebraska. I can't
figure it out. And I'm also horrible at predicting stuff. Anyway, everybody asks me for help with predicting stuff, and I would be an utter failure in Vegas. But Minnesota's dangerous, and I say that
defensively, they're horrible.
Defensively, they are truly horrible. But offensively, they've got some capabilities. I'll be curious to see how they do against Nebraska. It's kind of a wild card for me. I think I had a better feel for the Northwestern game. I mean, I truly thought, okay, this is going to be one of these games that if you had asked me, really, we're going to pin you down. We need an answer. What happens against Northwestern? What happened? That's what did happen is what I would have said. You know what? I bet they come in and nail us in a close one right at the end of the game, and a lot of it'll be due to penalties and turnovers, and that's really kind of what happened. Minnesota, I don't know. It's hard for me to figure them out because they're not a very good team. But guess what? Last year, they were not a very good team, and they put up, 400-some yards rushing against us. I think the freaking quarterback had like 380 of them. P.J. Fleck ran a lot.
P.J. Fleck.
I just like saying his name.
Hey, he's selling a lifestyle, baby, and that lifestyle is row the boat. Dr. Rob, thanks for coming in on a Sunday. I think it was good to get this one over, don't you?
I mean, chest stuff off my chest.
Yeah, you know, and you and I have just made up now, and first time you and I really kind of got to do a Twitter fist event.
What? Yeah, we've done that before.
All right. But I can't.
You say stupid stuff, I refute it. There you go.
It's funny because every Husker fan takes your side because they hate my guys. And that's fine. But you see, we're still friends, and now we still put on a pretty good podcast. So thanks for listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. We'll be back next week. Will we be talking about the first Husker win? Who knows? I still say go under center or kick the field goal. Rob lays out all his philosophical reasons, and he'll talk about it on Michael Severe's show. And Michael gets all analytical about it. But really, you don't have to read into it that much. You go, to me, I don't know. I would have gone under center.
The kicking game was sucking ass.
That's
at
why
that
I go
point.
Under center. I don't care. We only did it twice during the game. I don't care. Adrian Martinez pushing forward with his foot, pushing in the back for 1 yard is a better gamble than out of the shot.
I'll give you that.
All right. He's Dr.
I don't Rob disagree, Zadis. But you don't kick it.
He's Dr. Rob Zadis. I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.